Sheriff's Office operates on the basis of the user pays principle. So they may well get a certain sum of money from Treasury, but the bulk of their funding is from departments that they investigate. That's how they function. And how does that affect what we are doing in this bill? Like I said, you don't have to answer now. You can just think about it when you're ready, give me a response.
I could say that does that mean that the suggestion is that the Auditor General's salary does not only come from Department of Finance, but also from other departments?
Well, I think what it does, it comes from other departments, but that doesn't mean that salary can't be pegged at a particular point. I think that's something that we need to just bear in mind. But look at it from when you're ready.
Seeking to give effect to the committee's suggestions at the meeting on the 11th and the 12th of February. As repeated by you, this document still contains a lot of options, some of which the committee has already taken final decision, but you requested that they should be done so that committee we need to bring still eventually vote on the vote as a holistic view of the processes that will follow. Some new options have been inserted, again seeking to give effect to the committee's requests or proposals to previous meetings. So if we can then start, Chairperson, on page 1, the short title, and that has already been approved by the committee at its previous meeting, has been changed to be determination of remuneration of office bearers of independent constitutional institutions. We call that the previously, the discussions about the word members were that the Public Protector and Auditor General are not members, they are actually the Chapter 9 institutions. So that's the purpose of changing the short title of the book. And then, Chairperson, I have throughout the book, as again, by the committee tries to harmonize the terminology used in respect of all the Chapter 9 institutions as far as remuneration, conditions of employment, allowances and service benefits are concerned. So many options as far as that is concerned have been included in the bodies. I will not deal with particularly because the committee, as they go through the bill, will see that. Then on page 2, Chairperson, I've inserted a new option 2, right at the bottom where I've substituted the word on with the word for, and that is in view of the commission. passed and implemented in that act the name or sole title of that act was also amended. So it is then this is for this sole title of the Commission for Gender Equality is now in line with the sole title as amended by that act. I have also, Chairperson, at the request of the committee, included amendments to the Independent Communications Authority of South Africa Act 2000, in order to ensure that the Independent Remuneration Commission also determines the remuneration allowance for service benefits of councillors of ICASA. That is, and for that purpose on page 3, in the middle of page 3, there's a new option which I've inserted in the wrong title of this bill, indicating that we are also amending the, now we call it the ICASA Act. That is a consequential amendment. Page 4, all the options there again, Chairperson, is to harmonize the terminology that are being used in this bill. In the middle of page 4, option 2, committee members will note that I've substituted the word office with employment because at the previous meeting the committee was of the view that it would be better to say conditions of employment rather than conditions of office, because it was uncertain what conditions of office exactly means. Then, Chairperson, on page 5, in view of the fact that we are trying now to harmonize the terminology used in all the filming legislation of all the chapter 9s and in Gaza, I have to take changes to many of the headings of the German legislation. So on page 5, for example, the option in the middle of the page is where I then substitute the existing heading with a new heading for purposes of harmonizing and to create uniformity. Also on page 5, Chairperson, the second option I've included, again for uniformity, I've included the words allowances, number one, and secondly, and service benefits. And Chairperson, to be honest, none of these changes are major. It's basically or merely to create uniformity, as requested. As the committee will also see that on page 6, for example, again, I'm inserting the words allowances and other terms and conditions and service benefits, allowance and service benefits. Option 2 at the bottom of page 6, again, inserting the words allowances and service benefits. Then on page 7, in the middle of the page, a new option where I amending the heading of the Public Protector Act, again, in an attempt to create uniformity. Option 7 at the bottom, in the middle of the page, again, uniformity, including the words allowances and service benefits. I don't know whether the committee wants me to go through all these, because the majority of these options are intended to create uniformity as far as terminology is concerned, that has been specified by the committee. So maybe what I should do is only concentrate on the major or more important provisions that options that I have prepared. subject to your approval, if it's the first to do. Okay, if we then go to page 12. At the previous meeting, the committee decided that the whole issue of remuneration for part-time members doing additional work should be deleted from the board, because the view was expressed that that would, in any event, be included in the salary, this current salary package. The effect thereof is that at the bottom of page 12, I have then to include a new option where we delete the existing subsection 3 of that act. It's the Commission on for Gender Equality Act. The bill as introduced at actually, the bill as introduced substituted the existing subsection 3 with a new subsection 6. But in view of the decision of the committee, I deemed it necessary to then delete the existing subsection 3 and instead of replacing it. And that's the purpose of the option 2 at the bottom of page 12. Then,
I don't get why you're changing to that from what, I mean, how is that going to deal with part-time members?
Chairperson, at the moment, if you look at option 2, on page 12, at the moment, subsection 3 of the Commission for Gender Equality Act provides that part-time member of the Commission may, for any period during which that member, with the approval of the Commission, performs additional duties and functions, be paid such additional remuneration. And the decision of the committee was to take that out. So that's the purpose of option 2 at the bottom of the
thing.
I know that, but I mean, the intention, as far as I can recall, was that we didn't want to specifically say that part-time members, because that would be dealt with anyway by the remuneration commission, which I don't think that's necessarily, I don't really see the point of this other provision. There might be a difference in that between part-time and full-time commission.
That's the whole idea, that part-time members will be dealt with by the commission.
No, it's not the whole idea. They will be dealt with by the commission, but they must be covered by them. Do you think that's sufficient to cover?
Yes. Okay.
Chairperson, then again on page 14, the options there is to create uniformity the same on page 15, same on page 16, then one of the most important option that I have included is on pages 19 and 20. Now my position that the same uniform process will be applicable in respect of ICASA. The first means was that is supposed to be inserted is a definition of the word independent commission, which is in line with all the proposed definitions, or the proposed definition to be inserted in the founding legislation of all the other acts. That is uniform. And then if members look at page 20, there it's intended or proposed that the existing section 10 of the ICASA Act be substituted with a new section as proposed here. Then it's in line with the uniform
process or procedure that is proposed in respect of all the other Chapter 9 institutions, members will know that in this option, at the previous meeting, the committee had a long discussion on the issue to whom these institutions or commissions are accountable, and it was then decided that all the Chapter 9s are accountable to the National Assembly, and at that stage that the Public Service Commission, Financial and Fiscal Commission, and the CASA are accountable to Parliament. I have, however, in my proposed amendment, I'm suggesting that the National Assembly should also play a role and not Parliament. The reason, therefore, the reason, therefore, is that the National Assembly plays a role in the appointment of councillors of the CASA. If you look, for example, section 5 of the CASA, it provides that the council consists of chairperson and 8 other councillors appointed by the minister upon approval by the National Assembly. The National Assembly must submit to the minister. So, as far as the appointment of the chairperson and councillors of the CASA is concerned, the National Assembly plays a role and not Parliament, and that's why I'm proposing that when it gets to the termination of their remuneration and other allowances and other service benefits, the National Assembly and not Parliament should play a role, but that's something for the committee to decide. It was based, and I based my proposal on what is the present contained in the cost data. Right. Chairperson, then further on, it's again consequential amendments or proposed amendments for purpose of creating uniformity. On page 22, first option, it's proposed that the remuneration of the chairperson, deputy chairperson, and other members of the Commission for the Promotion and Protection of the Rights of Cultural, Religious and Linguistic Committees may not be reduced, and that their allowances and other terms and conditions of employment and service benefits may not be adversely affected. That is again for purpose of uniformity. Page 23, chairperson. Again, for purposes of uniformity, I'm providing that. Page 23. Sorry, I don't want to waste the committee's time because, as I said, there are so many same amendments. On page 23, the option in the middle of the page there, I'm proposing that the Auditor General is entitled to such remuneration, allowances, and other terms and conditions of employment and service benefits as determined by the President. What they're basically doing there is just to include the words remuneration, allowances, and other terms and service benefits. Because at present, it only refers to conditions of employment and other benefits. But again, that's for purposes of uniformity. The last major proposed amendment is on page 25.
it's proposed that the, and this is a new clause, the existing Public Audit Act does not contain such a provision, is to provide that the remuneration of the Auditor General may not be reduced, nor may his or her allowances and other terms and conditions of employment and service benefits be adversely altered during his or her continuation in office. And then that is to bring it in line with the members of all the other chapter 9s.
Continuation in office not during their term of office. If it's an extension, so if you're allowed to be appointed for a further period, then it's only during that period, not during the current period. So I think maybe term of office should be.
As opposed to continuation in office. Throughout, say this is
yeah.
Okay. Small change, but sounds better. It reads better.
I mean, if you say continuation, it could actually mean that during their first term, then they can actually change their benefits,
yeah.
Which is also not what we envisage anymore.
Okay.
So continue after that.
Alright.
Jefferson, yes. Then just one more thing. That came up yesterday afternoon, and the law advisor and myself are still looking at the issue, and that is whether the Independent Remuneration Commission, in terms of their act, has the power to make recommendations regarding conditions of employment. Apparently, the view is that in terms of the existing act, they do not have that power. They only have the power to make recommendations regarding salary, service benefits, upper limits of the salary, and the resources which are necessary to enable an office bearer to perform the functions effectively. The question has thus been, or has therefore arises, whether I have the power to make recommendations to the President regarding the conditions of employment or conditions of office of the Chapter 9 institutions. We are dealing with the matter, and the Gender Committee meets tomorrow. We will be in a position to give the committee an answer if they are present, or if that commission is present, do not have that power, we will have to enlist or insert another amendment to the Independent Commission.
Conditions of office. They must have a Canon photocopier, not a Samsung. Is that a condition of office?
No.
That could be interpreted that way.
That's one of the questions that we are having with the Chairperson. What exactly does or do conditions of office entail? Is that the working hours, number of days leave, all those kind of things? So those are issues that we need between the two of us need to try to find an answer for, so that we can then determine whether we should amend the existing Independent Commission Act.
At present,
present age does not give the independent commission the power to make recommendations to the president regarding conditions of employment or conditions of office.
What is that?
We can just find that. You have to put it in. This is now, it's what I'm going to read now is from the Act, that's not included in my document. Section 8 of the Independent Commission for the Remuneration of Public Office Leaders Act provides that the 8.1, the Commission may exercise the powers and shall perform the duties entrusted to the Commission by this Act, Section 219 of the Constitution, or any other law. In 2A, the Commission may conduct an inquiry into any matter in respect of which it is authorized by this Act, Section 219 of the Constitution, or any other law to perform any function. And then Section 8.4 provides the Commission shall, after taking into consideration the factors referred to in subsection 6, publish in the Gazette recommendations concerning the salary, allowances and benefits of any office bearer as defined in paragraphs blah blah blah. So clearly that section does not refer to conditions of employment. So that's why the question has been raised whether the Independent Commission has the power to do that as far as conditions of employment or conditions of office is concerned, and that's the issue that we are looking at the moment. As I said, unfortunately, this issue was only raised yesterday afternoon when I had a meeting with some officials, and then this question was raised, and we are looking at into that issue.
Mr. Schaefer, followed by Ms. Pitana Machak.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, surely we should rather be following this. I don't think we really consider that properly, actually, when you think about it. And I would think we should be rather following the wording that's in that Act rather than trying to amend that Act.
Thank you, Chair. I think one thing that is important to note is that historically this has been a sore point in terms of the constitutional court. Conditions of service for commissioners. And maybe even if it's not covered in the Act today, what needs to happen is that Section 8.4, you could actually indicate that maybe the Commission will look into the benefits and allowance of the office bearers, subject to enabling the regulations, which means these institutions must be compelled to have enabling regulations that actually talks to the Commission to their conditions of services. Otherwise, it becomes a problem. So maybe there, if only we could actually have just subject to enabling regulations, so that every constitutional body understands that it's important for them to have enabling regulations that should be gazetted.
Scathley raises the use of the term conditions of office. And we're trying to understand how that will be interpreted. Will it mean that people in these chapter 9s and similar offices will be able to say to the independent commissions, we don't want a ridiculous example, but when these things are signed into law, people read them and say, well, that's what it means. But what Mr. Labuschagne is saying is that him and the law advisors need a bit of time to apply their minds to that, because
he is of the view that that should not form part of the independent commission's purview or responsibility. So if the Human Rights Commission, for example, wants to purchase Canon photocopiers, it's got nothing to do with the independent commission. It's a matter between the Human Rights Commission and, I would imagine, Treasury or the Finance Office.
I don't know. It actually sounds like a ridiculous request, much more than what I'm actually putting on the table. How would we actually be in a position to decide as to what gadgets are bought in offices? But what I've actually mentioned is what I think is contentious in this regard. I understand what you're trying to say to me. But it looks like what is contentious is not really being looked at. We're looking at something that shouldn't actually be brought to us.
Well, you're raising the regulations in relation to determination of salaries and etc. Because that's what the bill deals with.
My impression was that we're talking about conditions of service.
What does that mean?
For office bearers. Conditions of service. What we expect you to do when you are in an office. We appoint you, we take you to a constitutional body. What do we expect you to be doing on a day-to-day basis? In most of the acts, be it South African Human Rights Commission, Commission on Gender Equality, CRS, this is what is missing. And my feeling is that, and this is why I was actually, my impression of it, this is what we are actually looking at.
Chairperson, I think this can have the same debate in one of the previous meetings, and why they indicated that it would be very difficult to set out a list of what exactly falls under the conditions of service. I would like to draw the committee's attention to section 219(5) of the Constitution. National legislation must establish frameworks for determining the salaries, allowances, and benefits of judges, the public protector, or the general members of any commission. So the Constitution only refers to the salaries, allowances, and benefits. So maybe that's an option that the committee can consider to follow it, but then we'll have to amend all the my amendments, but some of the existing acts already uses the expression conditions of office, conditions of employment, but I don't know, I'm in the hands of the committee, I don't know which way to follow.
No, that's precisely the point I was trying to point out to Mrs. Bilal Majake. We have to read 219(5) of the Constitution, which is exactly what we're doing now. We are putting into place national legislation that establishes the framework for determining salaries, allowances, and benefits of not judges, but the public protector, auditor general, and members of any commission provided for in the Constitution. That's what the bill seeks to do. I hear the point you're making. It's a relevant point. What we need to work out is where we locate it. I'm not convinced that it's in this book.
Yeah, I mean, now when you look at the Constitution also, it's clear to me that we should go over that, because it's exactly the same wording in the Independent Remuneration Act as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that obviously comes from 219(5) of the Constitution. And if you, whoopsie, that's a fine for my election campaign. I think if we're going to start getting into conditions of service or employment also, we might start ending up encroaching on the independence of the institutions, and I don't think we want to go there. So I would suggest we adopt the wording of the Constitution, leave it, and change the other acts accordingly.
Thanks, Chair. We will leave it, but quite evidently it's an area, it's a grey area in all the statutes, and this is what part of what creates confusion in Chapter 9 institutions in terms of roles and role clarification, because you will appoint office bearers, they come into the office, and if the Act is not actually very clear in terms of what you remember, there will be those that are full-time. The part-timers may not have a problem per se, in the sense that then they will come in as and when they are required in the office. But the full-time office bearers, they are in the office every day. And the current situation is such that people decide as to
what they're going to do.
Exactly. Which is the source of the confusion. And that's why I'm actually talking about enabling regulations. Because enabling regulations, it would be, we're not actually taking the independence of the institutions. We allow the institutions themselves to sit down and decide, okay, this is how we can handle it.
Well, I think you have a point. It's just that you approach it to the wrong place at the time. Maybe at some point when we deal with Chapter 9 that we are responsible for, we may need to look at that. I agree with you, there have been these bones of contention. I clearly recall in 19 year, there was a big controversy in the Human Rights Commission between the then chairperson and commissioners and the CEO, such that a portfolio committee had to travel to Johannesburg and sit with them in their boardroom, which was something like this, and say to the CEO in the presence of all the commissioners, you are the CEO, you are not the commission. Yes, but someone has to deal with the media, etc., etc. And he said, yes, we accept that. But the face of the commission must be the commissioners. Allow them to decide who deals with such matters. That is not your responsibility. And since then, I don't think we've had a problem. I think we resolved it there and then. There were no media present, fortunately. And that's how we got around that. But okay, I take the point you're making, but it's misplaced in this book. We can't provide for it here. We need to amend those founding pieces of legislation that I'm discussing here and look at how best we can deal with that. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, sir. For instance, I'm trying to bring also to the attention of the committee the Public Audit Act. It does not have the remuneration provision, but it had conditions of employment, which catered for the remuneration salaries. If I may read, it is subsection 1 of that section 7, which provides for conditions of employment. The oversight mechanism must consult the person recommended in terms of section 193 of the Constitution for appointment as Auditor General and make recommendations to the President for the determination of the conditions of employment of that person, including an appropriate salary, allowances, and other benefits. That in the bill, we have changed that to cater for remuneration and allowances and service benefits, in line with other acts that have been amended in that manner. So these conditions of employment now, I would say it is becoming a misnomer, where you cannot say what is it, what does it entail. Like Johan said, that we need to apply our minds and think of the implications and the consequences of whether we consider amending or what are their view. But another thing that I want also to mention, in Section 8 of the Independent Commission Act, it says the Commission may exercise the powers and shall perform the duties entrusted to the Commission by this Act, Section 219 of the Constitution, or any other law. So, whatever it is done, the Independent Commission will look at the specific Act, what it provides in order to exercise its power. So the powers of the Commission in terms of this are also in other legislation, the respective in the legislation of the independent institution.
Chairperson, I do not want to put the word voices of Parliament on the spot, but because they were not, or they didn't follow this, all the meetings of this committee, but maybe they, Mr. Jenkins, may have a view to express. I don't know. The reason why I'm asking this is so that we can obtain as much views as possible before we, Lord was and I, can sit down and further discuss this whole issue.
Now I know why you're here, Mr. Jenkins. Yes, you may.
This is not the danger, Chair, when I get asked questions. Now, Chair, the issue of the Auditor General is a bit of a unique position. The Public Audit Act was basically drafted between the ad hoc committee at that stage, ad hoc committee on the Auditor General Act, I think it was called, and persons in the office of the Auditor General. This is where the Act comes from. What Section 7 allows the oversight mechanism, which is now the Committee on the Auditor General, to do is to actually make those recommendations also on issues of leave, issues of office hours, etc. So it goes quite far. And how it plays out in practice, I think the respective chairpersons, I was in the committee most of the time, but through Honorable Hogan and then Masuta and later in Noto, they leave that to the office. So they look at that provision. They say that we're dealing with conditions of employment, including the appropriate salary allowances and other benefits. And that's the part that comes from the Constitution. My opinion is let's keep ourselves to that bit, especially when we're dealing with remuneration.
Right.
And the Public Audit Act went further, but how it plays out in practice is the committee leaves that really in a line. They make the recommendation to the President to say, those conditions are determined by the Office of the Auditor General and leaves it in the hands of that office. So the proviso or the caveat that you mentioned before in terms of what does it mean to say conditions of employment, I agree with you there. It goes quite far. The question on a policy level must be, do we want the Seriti Commission or the Independent Commission on the Remuneration of Office Bearers to deal with that? Or do you want to... Is that the appropriate level of decision making? I would ask the question, and I'm not posing an answer. I just said that's what one would do, but I think if one wants to focus on the purpose of this legislation and what Section 219 envisages, is we're dealing here with the appropriate salary, the salary allowances and other benefits, and leave it at that. When one goes further, I think you're opening the door to various interpretations. If I may, I'll do it bit of tongue in cheek, but there was once a discussion between the Secretary of Parliament and the then Moseneke Commission about what cell phones members are allowed to have, because this was part of the conditions of employment. I don't know if you recall that, but
you
certainly said that has got nothing to do with you, that's Parliament will decide that. So just to see where it can go.
I happened to serve in the standing committee on the Auditor General, and I think it is exactly what is happening.
Chairperson, it appears to me that that was not my intention, that I'm open the can of worms here, but I only mentioned it this initially to inform the committee that this question has been raised, and the state advisor and I will consider the issue and will come back to the committee with an answer.
Tomorrow, you said tomorrow, we have another step.
Confirm,
Chairperson. All right. Are there any other matters in this bill, honourable members, that you wish to raise? Advocate Jenkins.
No, thank you, Chair. I didn't want to. Just for information, and the decision needs to be taken on that. Where I've gone through the new draft and some of the proposals, just very quickly. But where we deal with that, the remuneration cannot be changed during the term of office. I would suggest we look carefully at what the Public Audit Act does, because, as you all know, that the RAN has depreciated close to 16 or 18% in the last 12 months. So when one puts in a proviso that says you cannot amend that salary, you can't reduce it and change. I mean, the way I understand it, it's really fixed. We need to somehow put in there that with the consent, the written consent of the parties, because it's, in my view, always going to be a contractual relationship.
Well, I'm trying to understand where the rand value comes into that.
Well, if you get appointed in a position...
I understand the last part. The written consent, fine. I think we should include that. My own view. It's fine. What harm can it do? Is Mr. Jenkins arguing for the word changed or reduced? He's talking about written consent.
He's saying the content changed, but that's not what it says. It says reduced. The content reduced. It doesn't say it can't be changed.
All right, let's deal with whether it can't be reduced or can't be changed. I thought it's reduced. Yes. Well, obviously, that's the whole purpose of the bill, that it can be increased. But it can't be reduced, Mr. Jenkins.
Yes, Chairperson, I would raise my case there.
Right.
Fine.
Written consent?
The question...
I don't see anyone in that position giving their written consent to have their salaries reduced.
No.
I don't know.
Fair enough. The question, Chair, if I may, the question that came up in, I think about 2 years ago, with the Auditor General under Mr. Ndembe, was can we increase the salary during his term of office?
Yes,
of course we can. It was a question there, and the answer comes straight out of the piece of legislation. So maybe my problem is I'm not envisaging exactly how the Independent Commission is going to fulfill this function, but I think they will overtake that whole debate that we had in the Committee on the Auditor General at the time. Because if the Act doesn't allow you to increase it, then one must ask, but why or how are you going to increase it? The Act says it.
It allows you to increase.
You see where, but I think it's fine. I think, and I take the point of the member, Schaefer, that it says reduce. It's clear. You cannot reduce. Yeah, that's fine. That would be necessary to ensure the independence.
Okay.
So.
Christine Silverstone?
Just, if we go with that option 2 on page 25, 2A, about this reduction of salary, 25, sorry. It's just that it's already covered in the Public Orders Act in 7.3, so there would need to be some kind of deletion of 7.3.
Section 7.3, Mr. Lobster, Public Orders Act.
Well, something there's something similar, not quite the same. That has the written consent.
So, Chair, I just want to make sure is that on page 25.
Yeah.
The proposed insertion of section 2, capital 8.
Yeah, if we go with that option, we would need to delete 7.3.
Of the Public Audit Act.
Or look at 7.3, because there might be some overlap.
Will you look at that, please, Mr. Lipscombe?
No.
Right. Mrs. Schaefer?
No, sorry.
No, you're okay. Can I be a little mischievous? I'm going to be. I'm exceeding my authority, and I'm doing this in Mr. Jenkins's presence, taking advantage of it. I as an MP, am not allowed to approach the Independent Commission, because we've adopted the principle that I cannot speak on my own behalf in terms of salaries and benefits. What we do is we send a small delegation to the Speaker, the Chair, the SMP, the Chief Whips, and so on. They speak on all our behalf. And that's the way it's been for as long as the Independent Commission has existed. So who's going to speak on behalf of the... I don't know who speaks on behalf of the Auditor General when that time arrives. Does he or she appear before that parliamentary committee? That's my first question. And so will the Auditor General now go find his way to Pretoria to speak to Judge Siriti? The same applies to the Public Protector and the Deputy. And will that also apply to the Human Rights Commission and so on? I don't know if you get the point I'm trying to make yet. Do they speak on their own behalf? Yes, Mr. Jenkins.
I think it's a very, very valid question, Chairperson. If one looks at the remuneration of Judges Act, I think this is a choice.
Right.
There is clearly indicated the Chief Justice must represent the judiciary.
There you go.
Including the magistrates.
Yes.
Simply because it's a question of independence. And how do you keep that vision of independence? And I think that's the same what's happening in Parliament. In terms of the Auditor General, what happened in the committee was the office, the CEO or the
CEO would
represent and make an argument to the committee. But the Act clearly envisages that the negotiation on the final recommendation will be between the Auditor General and the committee. And then the committee will make a recommendation to the President. So we need to put, in my view, we need to make that clear in the Act.
Which Act?
Well, if it's in the Public Audit Act, then that's the case it's for, but I would like to look at this amendment of Section 7, because the role of the Committee on the Auditor General is being removed. So is there going to be a negotiation?
Up there.
Up there, between the Auditor General and the Siriti Commission, for
yes.
Sure. And is that going to happen in all instances between a delegate or a delegation of the Human Rights Commission and the Gender Commission, etc., etc.? But it needs to be clear to define that role, who has that role to play, because when it is about your remuneration, it does get a bit serious, as you know. So it will be avoiding problems by saying how it should be done, not just what should be done. So the negotiation must happen at that level, and not just at an arbitrary level. You are aware of the court case that you have decided in the end in favour of the President's determination, but that was one of the things. How do we, a disgruntled part of the judiciary in that instance, or disgruntled...
Siri not available.
If you are disgruntled, how do you bring your concern up there? And if the Act says, well, you have to do it through your chairperson of the commission, then that's at least settled. And you're not going
well,
to get...
Settled, I don't know. That'll be, see, I used the word mischievous, but actually it wasn't.
want to raise them, particularly the magistrates,
yeah,
in the recent past, they were represented by the Chief Justice, okay, and still they were discouraged, and came to us and said, that commission of yours, saying to you and me, didn't listen to us. They made written submissions to them. Yes, but you see, that's part of the problem. Well, it's not a problem. As far as I'm concerned, it's good that they are represented by the Chief Justice. The Chief Justice will sit down with Judge Zilti and put forward the position on behalf of all the magistrates. I have no doubt that amongst parliamentarians there's unhappiness and even disgruntlement at whatever increases are decided by the Commission. I mean, I recall one year when President Mandela simply said there will be no increases. That was that. He did so publicly, and a lot of people were very unhappy. Very unhappy. But of course, that was the stature of the man at the time. You dare not say, well, I have a problem. So, to my mind, in the case of the magistrates, if they have a problem, then they should raise it with Chief Justice. Similarly, in the case of a member of parliament who is disgruntled, should raise it with his or her presiding officer. That would be the speaker or the chair, the MSP, and so on. So I don't know, Advocate Jenkins, whether we need further amendments to set out how it's done. Are we not opening up floodgates so that people go toy into Judge Siriti's commission?
I think it doesn't matter, one must just concentrate a little bit and see where it goes and see how it is being done now in practice at the various institutions or bodies that the Commission does have a mandate over to make a recommendation, and then see the additions to that, for instance, the Financial and Fiscal Commission and so forth, how exactly will they operate vis-a-vis the Commission and get the salary for them. Let's just think a bit about it.
Sure.
I don't know.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to suggest that perhaps it would be good if advocate could make a little research on countries that have got similar systems like ourselves, how they handle it.
Not really. Still having a job.
Let me just play the devil's advocate to say makes it interesting. To say that I'm actually looking at this 25, the amendment. To say that this is what actually created the confusion, when in actual fact probably it wasn't supposed to be either. Because we already have got laws around this,
yeah,
as to how to deal with the situation of the speech. Why did we try to make a provision for it?
I don't know whether we've helped you, Mr. Lums. There's no firm instruction on our part. We've just mulled over one or two matters, and there's no clear instruction, so you don't have to worry about it. All right?
Thank you. As I've committed myself, I'll come to the meeting tomorrow and ask the committee on the issue of conditions of employment.
Yes.
In the meantime, I will start, but actually I can't prepare a new working document unless we have one thing that I'm not 100% sure, but I do not have clarity, is does the committee wants me to, or does the committee want me to prepare amendments for each of the pieces of filming legislation, providing for the making of regulations as far as conditions of service are concerned, for the committee, after we have given the committee an answer to what it and the final instructions as far as that is concerned.
I think that's the way we should go around to be prepared. Rather than for Mr. Labuschagne to come forward with options or proposals on paper, we decide once he's given us the answer to it. Okay?
The meaning of not many, does it mean it will not have any research done around that or what? You are responsible for saying not many.
Not many?
Yeah, that's what you said. No, when I requested that you should have a look at countries that have got similar systems like ours, your response was not many.
I didn't say he mustn't do the research.
Okay.
I said there are not many countries in the system like ours. So his research would be quite easy. Okay. Right, Mr. Labuschagne?
Thank you, Chairperson. I just need to point out to the committee that there are still a few options that the committee needs to take decisions on. I assume that will be once the committee is in a stage that it wants to vote on the vote.
And that will be very soon. Yeah, that's, and I'm hoping we can do that tomorrow, but I don't want to commit us to that. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thank you, Chief. May I please be excused?
Yes,
sir. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Labuschagne. That deals with determination for today. We now come to Special Investigation Units and Special Tribunals Amendment Bill.
We have advertised, I haven't received any comments. We have had a presentation already, which I sent to the committee, and I would like it population of desirability and acceptance. That's what I would like, because I think they are a very small in nature and uncomplicated but very effective ways of avoiding the problems we've had over the last 3 years in the unit, and given the levels of corruption in the country, I think it is a very sensible proposal to avoid abuse of the system.
Decided not to comment on the merits of private members' poll,
prior to a motion of desirability, the penalty being passed. So we will refrain from commenting on this. Is that just a question? Mr. Solly, again, you're under no obligation, but.
Although the bill concerns the special investigating unit, my difficulty in discussing the person at the unit is that it's not a matter that I'm just on you in terms of its work and contribution to the issues. There are issues that are raised.
I've read the bill, and it tries to address the situation that at a particular time in the past taken steps, but that is no longer existing now. And also, when I look at it, it does not. Differ that much with the previous bill that this committee has dealt with, mainly the Constitution 18th Amendment Bill that was trying to address the situation that had existed in the NPA at a particular time. And then that is all that I want to remark, Chairperson, to say. I view it as similar to what the Constitution 18th Amendment Bill intended to do. Thank you, sir.
Chair, I just want to place on record that it's got nothing to do with what happened in the past. I mean, it's influenced by what happened in the past, but it's very much designed to ensure that such an incident cannot happen again. To say simply that it's just something that didn't happen in the past is not the case. I mean, it is, but it's not only that. And that the intention is to change very small things in the Act to make very big impacts on the potential for such an incident to happen again. And I think it would be very remiss of us not to approve of it. And it provides more oversight for us as Parliament also, over the appointments of the President, and it will ensure that vacancies cannot exist for an extended period of time. And I think it's in the country's interest that such an eventuality is not even legally possible.
Yes, Mr. Solly. Thank you. Yes.
Yes.
Thanks for your presence. Well, he thought his presence would be necessary. Well, yeah, but I think I appreciate the fact that he took the trouble. Others don't. Okay.